Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode of the Cult Popture Podcast was brought to you by our Patreon. If you want to tell us which films we should watch, listen to up to 2 extra exclusive podcasts a month, or give us something to discuss in our new post-credit scenes at the end of each episode, then please consider joining the cult and donating at www.patreon.com/cultpopture.
Jesse Trump talked about Parasite winning Best Picture.
In a good way or in a bad way?
In a very bad way.
Oh, 100%.
And he's like, oh, Best Picture, he's like talking about how bad were the Academy Awards this year. Oh, Best Picture went to South Korea.
It's so great, isn't it? Because it's like when the guy you hate in your class says something so fucking stupid and you're just like, you fucking piece of shit. Of course you'd think that. You know, like, of course Trump doesn't like Parasite. Ben Shapiro didn't like Parasite either.
Yeah. Well, Trump's more of a North Korean fan.
That's true. He's probably more of a fan of North Korean cinema, who also made a film called Parasite, but they are the parasite in it. Mm. There you go.
All
That's
right.
My biting political commentary to open the episode with.
All right, well, sorry to get political right at the top of the podcast, but...
I don't mean to get political, but what the fuck are birds?
Okay, well, so, I mean, it's kind of fitting in that we're doing the Oscars of the 2010s, and the 2010s may be the most political decade in history.
it certainly had politics in it, and yeah. I think as well it's cool that while everyone at the end of 2019 was doing their like what's the best film of the decades list, we're like nah bitch, the decade's not over yet, we're gonna wait till February to do this idea. And here we are.
Yeah, but as we all know, the decade is over. The 2010s have come to an end. It's now 2020. It's the start of a new decade known as the 2020s. This is what we're going to do here is we're awarding we've created a list of nominees, which we isn't just, you know, the three of us came up with. We outsourced and got the kind of biggest group of people to come together and create a list of nominees, which we then, or like a short list essentially, which was then whittled down, and then those same people voted on those nominees to choose winners. And so this is kind of like the way we're going to do this is these awards given out to individual accomplishments and whatnot, but as we go through the podcast we'll talk about, so you know, someone might not be the best, might not have had the single best performance of the decade, but, you know, we can talk about who the actual best actor of the decade was looking at their entire body of work. So there's kind of like two different things that we'll be talking about throughout this podcast. Yeah. So don't be like, oh, you know, they don't deserve it because they did 4 films that were great. It's like, yeah, but this person did 1 film that was the best, you know?
According to these votes as well, and these are votes from people whose opinions we trust, and from... What we tried to make a wide variety of different people types here in our sort of mainly white male bubbles that we try to break out of as much as we can.
Oh, don't, buddy. So we have a diverse... Our academy was more diverse than the actual academy.
Percentage-wise, you're probably right. And if you've just started listening, everybody, and you've never heard the show before, welcome to the Cold Popture Podcast, specifically the Cold Popture Oscar season, as we run down, as we close, winding down for the year. My name is AJ, and you're Richard, and that's Aaron.
Hello.
Just thought I'd jumped right into a conversation.
Yeah, because that biting political satire at the start.
Mm. Everyone who doesn't know us already is switched off after hearing my political. yeah.
So we didn't do every single Oscar category. We left off a few of the shorts and the documentaries. I mean, I guess we could have done documentary, but we didn't, and that's fine.
We didn't do sound either, quite controversially. Or VFX or special.
Is it
effects.
Actually controversial that we didn't do sound? Have you had?
No, I don't think anyone's going to get upset. But if this were a more popular podcast,
the phone lines are ringing off the hook,
and the audio quality on those phone calls is incredible.
Oh mate,
we don't know the results. Is that correct, or do you know the results?
I have them open in front of me, but I haven't looked at all of them yet.
There you go. So we will find out as we go through it who's won.
It's worth mentioning just at a glance there's a lot of ties, or like second place will have like six things that all have the same amount, kind of thing.
Right, so for the awards we are going to be giving out for the official cult popture Oscars of the 2010s are Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Original Screenplay, Best Original Song, Best Score, Best Cinematography, Best Film Editing, Best Animated Feature, Best Supporting Actress, Best Supporting Actor, Best Actress, Best Actor, Best Director, and Best Picture. And the nominees are all, as Richard said, we got our outside opinion to make sure we weren't missing things, but we did want to emphasize staying power, and you know, films that have stayed in the public consciousness. So you don't,
it's essentially like if the Oscars were to actually do this, the kind of things they would pick.
Yep. So like I loved my in 2019 and 2018, my favorite films of each of those years were Sorry to Bother You and Knives Out, and I think Knives Out is nominated for screenplay, but nothing else. But the point being is, like, I'm able to accept that my favorite does not necessarily mean it is the most iconic film of the decade, and if I can accept that, so can you, listeners. That's not to say you shouldn't tell us ones we missed out on.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, if we were doing, the thing to remember is this is the Oscars of the 2010s, not the best films or the best in each of these categories. I don't know. It's a weird thing. We'll talk about it. But anyway, let's get a start on with Best Adapted Screenplay. So do we want to talk about like our shortlist and then our eventual nominees?
I don't have the shortlist in front of me, but I feel like we should just say the nominees.
Okay, let's go to the nominees.
Because if we announce the shortlist and then someone's favorite pick wasn't even on that, then it hurts even more, you know. So
yeah,
let's just stick to the nominees and maybe mention certain shortlist nominees if
they
up.
Feel like big snubs. Yeah, all right. Okay, do you want to tell us what the nominees were?
All right, so the nominees for Best Adapted Screenplay of the 2010s, which I don't know how common knowledge this is, but adapted also includes sequels and remakes and based on real life things. It's a weird category, but here
although
we go.
Actually, if it's based on, because it can be an original screenplay if it's based on real life but there hasn't been a previous thing written about it, like right. 1917 was original.
Okay,
even though it's adapted from.
Okay. Oh, and also every award has 5 to 10 nominations, but we didn't want to leave anything out just for the sake of conforming to some arbitrary number. So the Best Adapted Screenplay nominees for the 2010s are The Social Network. Do you have who's written everything in front of you that you can follow up with?
Oh, by Aaron Sorkin.
Little Women.
Which is Greta Gerwig.
Jojo Rabbit.
Taika Waititi.
Logan.
Written by Scott Frank, James Mangold, and Michael Green.
And Arrival.
Which is written by Eric Hessera.
There we go. So, what do you guys think's going to win? The Social Network, Little Woman, Jojo Rabbit, Logan, or Arrival?
Well, I know the answer, so I'll abstain.
Aaron, what do you think?
Well, I picked a movie I have not seen because from what I've heard, it's a fantastic adaptation. So I picked Little Women, but I think it will probably be The Social Network just because of, like, you know, the way in which Aaron Sorkin's writing is viewed, and also because he's a fellow Aaron, so, like, obviously he gonna win.
Yeah, I would tend to lean towards The Social Network 2, and I'm pretty sure I voted for The Social Network purely because that's the big dick energy that film has, and it came out in 2010, so right at the start of the decade, and is still vying for the title of best film of the decade, and also the fact that it's written so intelligently, and because it's
written by an Aaron.
And yeah. It's written by an Aaron, and also because it was about a subject which is more relevant now than it was at the time of release, and it feels eerily precognitive because of that. You know, Facebook only got crazier after The Social Network came out.
Yeah, I do wonder if there's a film this year that's going to have the same kind of staying power for this decade.
Yeah.
But there can only be one winner, and this one's actually quite close. So, in third place,
we're doing places.
Well,
the Oscars don't do places. Okay,
yeah, this isn't the Oscars. This is the Cop Option podcast. In third place, we have Jojo Rabbit.
Uh-huh. Okay.
In second place, we have Little Women.
Of course.
Nope.
And then in first place, we've got The Social Network.
Yeah,
come on, Aaron Sorkin. Aaron, do you want to accept it? I give up on behalf of Aaron Sorkin.
Thank you. I'm very honored. After having written such classics as, what did he start off writing?
The West Wing.
That's what I'm thinking of. West Wing. Moving on to other projects in my life. I should have really researched Aaron Sorkin before stepping up.
You should have researched every nominee.
Getting that name.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, Mum, Dad. I know I've just been born, but I need the rundown on every Aaron before I can accept his name.
What do you think, Richard? What do you think of The Social Network winning this award?
But back at 100%. Yep. Like, it's timely and it's managed to stay relevant. And it's like, you know, there's the argument that Aaron Sorkin scripts are, set in like a heightened reality where everyone is super intelligent and thinks of like the exact right thing to say at every point, which is every time one of his films come out, someone will inevitably criticize that, but it's like at the same time he's so good at it that like it's forgivable, and you just accept that, like, yeah, all these characters are witty and clever and
yeah. And I think just this script itself is like a specimen as well. Like, there's such a science to the writing in it, and it's very captivating. There's a lot of I think there's a really good lessons from the screenplay video on The Social Network script that everyone should check out.
Yeah. That's the scene where he's in a bar and he's like talking to
his ex-girlfriend. It's the opening scene of the film.
Yeah,
good stuff. Okay, so now on to best original screenplay. AJ, do you want to go through that?
All right, so best original screenplay, which is a screenplay based on nothing, we have in the nominees Her, written by
Spike Jonze.
Get Out, written by
Jordan Peele.
Knives Out, written by
Rian Johnson.
Eighth Grade, written by
Bo Burnham.
Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, written by
Martin McDonagh.
Lady Bird, written by
Greta Gerwig.
Inception, written by
Christopher Nolan.
And Parasite, written by
Bong Joon-ho and Han Jin-won.
Was Inception only written by Christopher Nolan?
Yeah, I'm just finding that out now. That's really interesting.
I always thought it was his brother was on there as well.
Yeah, Jonathan Nolan. But okay, according to let me just double check that's not a story by credit.
So there are 8 nominations for this category, and I think 8 examples of the certainly. I'm quite proud of how we've whittled down these lists. I think we've done a good selection here. I was talking to you guys before pod yesterday about how shocked I was that Inception was nominated. It was actually nominated the actual Oscars for Best Original Screenplay. And I like the film, but I think the screenplay is a bit rough in places. But you guys, you and Rowan, Richard, you really kind of talked it up, and it kind of ended up selling it to me. And I was like, you know what? It is an inventive concept. And what is a screenplay if not a concept?
Mm. Yeah, I think you're overstating my involvement in that conversation, but sure, it's there.
Yeah, I was present.
But that being said, I think the winner is going to be Get Out. I think that's the best screenplay,
Aaron, what's
original
pick?
Screenplay of the 2010s.
Yeah, that was my pick as well, actually.
Yeah, It's interesting because it elevates like a shitty B movie plot to a serious Oscar contender.
Mm.
And then and also Lady Bird, I think, is a similar thing. Not like not that it's a shitty B movie kind of thing, but it's that it's like this Lady Bird could have been a Netflix original and no one would bat an eye, but because of Greta Gerwig's direction and her script, it like elevates it.
Absolutely. I think the standouts specifically, and the ones, there's three on this list, Knives Out, Lady Bird, and Eighth Grade, I feel are the three most encapsulating original screenplays of the decade. Like, I feel like they're not necessarily, well, they are what the decade has been about as well, like socially and politically, but they also have represented a new kind of voice that we've never really seen. In such a scale before, I think. Whereas the others are probably more traditional, I would say.
Yeah. But a lot of people mentioned to us as well when we sort of sent out the list and asked for people's input that a lot of people were like talking about how it's a lot more skewed recently kind of thing. But AJ, you sort of thought that was kind of like
I would say if you are judging a decade of film based on how pertinent to the decade it is, which is sort of what we're doing, it doesn't really surprise me that most of the biggest and bestest ones would be in the second half of the decade, because that's when people know what the decade is. You know what I mean?
And to be fair, the early part of the decade, there were some pretty terrible films nominated for Oscars.
Yeah.
So I think that makes sense that it would be skewed to the later half of the decade, and you know, you might just be like, oh, it's just recency bias, which is possible as well. But I don't know. I think that something, especially something like Get Out, is like, this is something that can only come out in 2017, right?
Yeah.
So
and I think
When
it came out as well, people were like pretty aware of it being like incredibly of its time, and like kind of it kind of represented, I guess, that in Moonlight, the kind of the like new wave of African American cinema, kind of reaching its adolescence, or whatever comes after adolescence. Adulthood.
Maturity.
And I think that's what best screenplays get judged for, or at least that elevates them to a level where they often win, is, you know, that measure. So that's my prediction, is Get Out will win.
Sweet. We've just gotten another response, so I've just turned off responses. So it hasn't changed the previous award, but I just saw some percentages shift, but it hasn't affected the winner in these two categories. So third place equal is Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri by Martin McDonagh, and Parasite by Bong Joon-ho and Han Ching-won. In first place tied, because that's how you do placings when there's a tie. All right. There's no second place when you have two tied for first place.
And a decade ends in the 9, not the 10.
It's a tie for first place between two films without in the title. Knives Out and Get Out.
Hell yeah. Cool. So the Oscar goes, for the first time in Oscar's history, it's going to two films.
It's actually not the first time in Oscar history that's happened.
Is it not?
No, it's happened a few times. Most recently, Skyfall and Zero Dark Thirty tied for best sound mixing.
What?
Did that happen in the ceremony?
Yeah. It's a tie. You both get Oscars.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's happened half a dozen times, but that's the most recent.
Wow, I feel like I've never seen that like happen live. And I would watch the Oscars a few times in my life.
Richard, I think it was sound editing, not sound mixing.
Fuck off.
Just off the top of your head.
Yeah, actually it was sound editing, not sound mixing.
What you didn't hear, listeners, was the 2 minute gap in between when Richard said that and now, when he quickly looked it up. And
yeah. Anyway. Well, you know, I want to give the due respect to the soundies. Who we aren't respecting in this podcast.
Who's excluded from this podcast.
Okie dokie.
Cool. Well, I'm happy with that. I love Knives Out a lot, and I love Get Out a lot. It's the year of the decade for outs.
I think Get Out is one of those, like, this is totally emblematic of the decade. Mm. It's great to have, like, this fresh African-American voice in that can, like, take a genre film and really elevate it. And I think Knives Out is a bit of recency bias, if I'm being perfectly honest.
Probably. I didn't vote for it, so I feel I can.
Well, it's your bloody your propaganda video you made about it being the most pertinent film of the decade. People are like, wow.
It
I know this is
it
the
is.
One AJ wants me to vote for.
All right. Best original song is up next. Aaron, do you want to read out the nominees?
Can I see the nominees from here? All right. For best original song, we've got Shallow from A Star Is Born, Skyfall from Skyfall, Happy from Despicable Me, Let It Go from Frozen, Remember Me from Coco, Visions of Gideon from Call Me By Your Name, All the Stars from Black Panther, oh my god, is there more? Yeah, The Yellow is cool, Everything is Awesome from The Lego Movie, and How Far I'll Go from Moana.
Now, I am not much of a, I don't consider myself a bit of a, you know, a music guy. I enjoy the odd song from time to time, but I'm certainly not an expert on music. But looking at this list, I would say most of them feel like they fucking stuck in the zeitgeist and deserve to be on this list. I would say the only ones that I personally didn't hear a lot would be Visions of Gideon and All the Stars. I didn't hear as much as the others.
Really?
What
the fuck?
Yep. Are you joking? Yep.
No. I'd say, yeah, All the Stars was like a huge
mega
crossover
hit.
Like people could quite easily not realize it was written for the movie.
I don't remember how it goes. I don't remember how All the Stars goes.
It's so good, man.
You'd hear it and be like,
you'll hear it,
oh,
yeah.
I've heard
oh,
the
yeah,
song
fuck, I didn't realize that was from Black Panther. Yeah. That's what you'd say. And you'd be like, fuck, I'm an idiot. That's what you'd
hear. You would
but I would say, like, Remember Me from Coco. I'm sure you didn't hear a lot of radio play for that song.
No,
AJ.
I'm sure you don't
tool.
Really remember me.
Do you know that when I listed off the ones that didn't stick with me, I would have included Remember Me, but I actually forgot it, which is... just how much it didn't stick with me.
But yeah, I would say, and Visions of Gideon from Call Me By Your Name, those are the two songs that it's like their place in the film and their inclusion of the film is so like poignant, and especially in the case of Coco with Remember Me, the entire film revolves around that song. We spoke about this on the podcast at the time. Mm. That... You can't have one without the other, and you can't take one away from the other and have it stand on its own. But your Shallows, your Happies, your Let It Goes, they all got so much radio play that they...
I love that Happy and Everything Is Awesome made it on here purely because of how much it would be like unrealistic for us to not include them and not necessarily how good the songs themselves are.
I think Happy 100% deserves to be there.
I like Everything Is Awesome a lot more than Happy. Happy was overplayed for me.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, you're sick of Happy because of how good it was and how often it got played.
We're saying the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm saying that's why it deserves to be there, because
I know, I'm not saying it doesn't deserve to be there. I'm saying it's funny that it's there and amongst things like Shallow, which I enjoy.
Didn't get overplayed.
But I don't know. I'm just saying I'm not sick of it. God, man, I'm just trying to banter. Someone else talk for a bit. What do you guys think of these nominations?
I think they're great. I don't know what the fuck AJ's on about.
Yeah, I know. Well, they're all great. Why you're always bad mouthing best original song the category.
I am. That's true.
It's because he doesn't listen to music. He enjoys a song from time to time.
Yeah.
Anyway, should we go over the winners?
What did you guys vote for?
I voted for Visions of Gideon.
Yeah, Visions of Gideon's probably my favorite song.
Oh,
there.
So good.
But I think there's a strong argument to be made that it should go to Let It Go.
Yeah, it's
because
probably the most
iconic. Because everyone's so sick of it, but fuck, it's a good song.
And also, like, children grew up with that song, man.
Yeah.
Like, it will be in the canon for...
Yeah,
many years to come.
Yeah, like this is a whole new world, and like
Hakuna Matata.
Hakuna Matata, like this is gonna in 30 years time we'll still be talking about Let It Go.
Yeah.
It'll still be busted out at like karaoke nights.
Yeah.
That being said, I actually voted for How Far I'll Go, which despite not achieving the same level of iconic as Let It Go, I think is way closer to those other Disney songs you mentioned. Like musically, I think sounds way more like classic Disney. I actually don't like Let It Go that much because it didn't sound like a Disney song to me. It sounded like a pop song that was like shoved into a Disney movie. I don't know. I had a conversation with a musician friend of mine about this recently and did not retain any of the information, but he did agree with me. And that's the closest we have on this podcast to a musical expert opinion.
What's interesting, because I actually don't really like How Far I'll Go that much, but I love Let It Go.
Wow.
Both films I only watched for the first time last year and saw, you know, their actual purpose in the film. But enough about what we think. Let's see what the public...
And how many people are in our academy? All up?
I don't want to spoil that for the listeners. Okay.
It's a good handful of people. It's not like it was like three people. Yeah.
So this is probably the biggest...
It was four people. No. Sorry.
Yeah, it's us three. We got one woman.
four people in your hands. More than people.
So this one, yeah, has the biggest spread of votes. This one seems to be the most contentious. For third place, it's a four-way tie.
Oh my gosh.
Between All the Stars from Black Panther. Take that, AJ.
Mm-hmm.
Third place.
Four-way tie.
Yeah.
How many...
Shallow from
take,
A Star
take
Is
that,
Born.
AJ, as if that at all.
Shallow from A Star Is Born, Skyfall from Skyfall, and Visions of Gideon from Call Me By Your Name.
Oh,
and then tied for first place is How Far I'll Go from Moana. So take that, Richard and Aaron.
Oh.
And Remember Me from Coco.
Oh my god.
Really?
Yeah.
Remember Whoa. Me made it that far. Wow. Very interesting. So if Oscars tie all the time, does that mean there can be a tie for Best Picture?
The way Best Picture's tallied, you can't.
Okay.
But I wouldn't say Oscars tie all the time. It's happened like six times in 92 years.
If Oscars literally tie with every second award, does that mean...
Yeah, because the as far as I'm aware, the categories are just like whoever has the most votes, but the runoff voting in for Best Picture ensures that that can't happen,
right?
Because it's
they vote again when if their film
well, so you rank them from one to however many there are, then they tally up all the people that voted number one, like which film has the most people voting at number one. If a film has 51% of the votes or over 50% of the votes from that wins. If not, they look at all the people that put number nine as their number one. They take their number twos as number one and then add them up again if a film then has over... And so eventually they just keep eliminating the bottom film and all the people that ranked that as number one take their number two until one film has over 50% of the votes for number one.
I'm genuinely shocked that it was a tie between those two songs. That enough people have that eclectic take. Because I was honestly, I thought it would go to Shallow, Let It Go, or maybe Skyfall. Like, those seem to be the ones that project the image of the 2010s in my head the most. But I feel like, even though I voted for it, How Far I'll Go and Remember Me are two
it's
very...
It's not even that good.
No, it's my favourite, but I don't think it's... I didn't think it was the most iconic out of the bunch.
Get in the comments. I think...
I was honestly expecting you to say, and there's only one person who voted for How Far I'll Go, and I guess it was AJ.
I mean, I'm not saying a significant number of people voted for it. I'm just saying that it's tied for first place.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's the one that I feel like... most of our the ones I read out that are either tied for first or third, any of those could have won feasibly. Mm. Visions of Gideon is more of a this is my personal one than I think it has the staying power of the rest of them, because it wasn't even the song nominated for the film.
Yeah, when you think about it though, I feel like the Adele song Skyfall should kind of sit quite highly and like most iconic of the decade, because it's also like the decade of Adele, where she like became super famous and then quit music, you know, in the like 2010s basically. Well, I think 2009 her first album came out, but
that's that conversation we were having at the start, that it's like the this
Trump
is the specific
didn't like
song.
Parasite.
Yeah, this is the best song of the decade, but not necessarily the artist who best represents the decade.
Yeah,
And also like the three Bond films we got this, well, not really, because one of them came in the next decade and it hasn't actually come out yet. But that Skyfall did so well that they essentially just gave it to Sam Smith and Billie Eilish and just said, "Just do this again."
Yeah. All right, save it for Film Franchise Fortnight in a few weeks. Come on.
Okay, so now our next one is Best Score. So again, we're not really music people, so but trying to go off, you know, understanding that what the general consensus is amongst filmy, you know, musical
things that I've read and things I've heard people say.
Yeah.
And also our own little academy, which we made sure to select musical people to vote in, you know.
Yeah. Although, AJ,
what?
I've just realized something that you. So you put. Let's read out the nominees, one of which was added by you, and got like an automatic buy into the nomination from our shortlist. So our nominees are The Social Network, Dunkirk, Arrival, Blade Runner 2049. Inception, The Hateful Eight, First Man, Black Panther, and 2009's Up.
Oh, shit.
So, I'll tell you what, though. No one voted for Up. So,
that's so embarrassing. For the record, that was one that was suggested to me by another Academy member, and I didn't even think about the year it came out, and I just thought, yeah, that's a score I remember. Like the little please stand by thing pops up with an elevated
music version of Spanish Flea.
And a cat has pulled the plug out of. No, it's an elevated music version of like the Up theme music.
Yeah, why do you send me, dude?
Which would sound like AJ.
Best score. I personally, I think the Up should be disqualified because it didn't come out in the 2010s.
This isn't even as bad as when La La Land accidentally won over Moonlight. Like, this is less of a blooper than what's happened at the actual
Oscars.
Because,
for one, no one gives a shit about the Cult Popsha podcast compared to the fucking Oscars.
And for two, it's like a category that's like... It's not the top category.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, you didn't say who composed all these... songs, okay, Richard. I feel that's
The Social Network was Trent Reznor
know.
And Atticus Ross. Dunkirk was Hans Zimmer. Arrival was Johan Johansson. Blade Runner 2049 was, I believe, Hans Zimmer?
I think so.
Benjamin Wallfish and Hans Zimmer. Inception was Hans Zimmer. Hateful Eight was Ennio Morricone. First Man was Max Richter, I believe. remember all of... Justin Hurwitz, it says.
Who's Max Richter then?
Max Richter did. He's done a bunch of stuff. Black Panther was Ludwig
Göransson.
Yeah, Ludwig Göransson. And Up, I don't give a shit who fucking composed it because it wasn't in the fucking 2010s. Okay, so what do we think?
I think that. My favorite is The Social Network. I think the most iconic is Inception, but I voted for The Social Network.
Yeah.
But if we were giving it to composer of the decade, it's Zimmer. Of course it is.
Yeah, for sure.
Zim's hands down.
Yeah, hands down. Arms down. it's one of those things that... although I would also make an argument that Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross could give them a run for their
easily.
Money in the decade, because The Social Network was their first film score, as far as I know. Oh. And then they have, you know, dominated this decade. Like, it's when Watchmen was announced, that was one of the things that excited me the most about it, was that, like, they were doing the score for this TV show, and then, and now they're doing the score for David Fincher's next film, Mank, and they're using period accurate instruments, so they usually heavily rely on synths and stuff, so it'll be really interesting to see what they do when they're limited
they're
to
also doing,
1930s.
They're also doing Pixar's Soul as well.
That's right, yeah.
So I think that out of these, though, like, ones like Dunkirk, Arrival, maybe just mainly those two are memorable to me because they're different and kind of interesting. Like, they've like, because a score's got to be pretty memorable for it to stay in your mind, you know, because scores are kind of designed to be, you know, almost subconscious.
At least it's like a particular theme, like you know, Harry Potter, Star Wars,
yeah,
those kind of things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, also another one that did a lot of good work this decade is Junkie XL, who did Mad Max Fury Road, Batman v Superman. Drastically different films in terms of quality, but the scores are both great. All right, Aaron, what are you picking to win this?
I picked Dunkirk, which might have been a bit of a surprise, but I think it's quite iconic in terms of, like, reinventing the score for, like, a war movie. Like, it seems quite
with the ticking clock kind
of, yeah, it seems kind of intuitive now that we, like, think about it, but,
and especially that 1917 did it as well.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but now that it's been, yeah, it seems intuitive. Like, when he did it, was like, oh, of course, a ticking clock, it makes sense, because it's like, you know, you're building down to this thing, but
yeah,
no one thought to do it before that.
Yeah, and also, like, Inception as well is a lot more than just the that it's it uses that Edith Piaf song that slowed down, because, you know, they use that as to wake them up and things like that. And so at each level of the dream, the kind of part of that song is used slowed down to create the score for each of the levels. So there's a lot of really clever stuff done in it. I should also mention that I forgot to add Interstellar was a late addition to this category as well, because people suggested it. I disagree with it. I think it's a terrible score.
Well, that was sort of the thing about Dunkirk as well, is that, like, people began to so, like, heavily kind of basically do exactly the same as Interstellar, that he was like, we gotta push off in a new direction, man. Like, we gotta find something new.
Yeah, that's when you know it's good, is when because did Hans Zimmer do Interstellar as well?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
So when you along with Inception and Interstellar, you kind of pioneer a certain genre of score and then do something completely different for Dunkirk, that's bossing, you know what I mean? Like, that's how you know you're the best composer of the decade.
Yeah, Interstellar is also there, Hans Zimmer. But as for the winners, okay, so tied for second place, we've got Arrival and Black Panther. And then with 50% of the votes,
whoa,
and a landslide victory,
whoa,
The Social Network.
Huh?
Wow. So Inception didn't even place.
So I will say, though, that interestingly, so you've got, with 50%, you've got The Social Network, and then you've got the other two tied at around 15%, and then you've got three that are tied for fourth place, and that's Dunkirk, Inception, and Interstellar. So it could be that split the vote, you know? People trying to choose their favorite Zimmer one, which is maybe, you know, why you would take out something like Interstellar.
really pushing this take out Interstellar.
But I think that is actually really interesting and really kind of telling that the Zimmer vote seems to have been split. Because I think if we'd put down best composer of the decade, Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, Hans Zimmer, Ludwig Göransson, Johan Johansson, who are the people that ended up winning, Hans Zimmer would have won. Not if nothing else, because he's the most household namey of that lot.
I mean, but hey, how good is that Social Network score, baby?
Oh, it's
so
great.
Good, so yeah. Good. Bong, 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 bong. So
we should,
good.
Re-record the score to that film and okay, up next, best cinematography. So this is the art of capturing the pictures.
Do you have the names of the cinematographers in front of you?
Yep.
Cool. So the nominees for best cinematography are Blade Runner 2049,
Roger Deakins,
The Revenant,
which was Emmanuel Lubezki,
and he also did Birdman. Is that correct?
Yep.
Who's also nominated? Star Wars: The Last Jedi. You motherfucker! Yeah, I've got them in front of me.
Steve Yedlin.
Yeah, Yedlin. 1917.
Which is Roger Deakins.
And Dunkirk.
Dunkirk was Hoyt Van Hoytma.
Yes, he was.
What's with all these repeating first name, last name, and the cinematographer and composer? Well, there's two, but that's still kind of significant to me.
And one of them passed away, so can you have a lot of respect?
Wait, it wasn't Hoyt, was it?
Nah. Johan.
Oh, thank God.
Oh, thank God, Hoyt.
These are some fucking good-looking films.
And so interestingly, Emmanuel Lubezki won like a hat trick of Oscars because he won it for Gravity, and then the following year won for Birdman, and then the following year won for The Revenant.
Was Gravity not was Alfonso Cuarón not the cinematography for Gravity?
No. Directed it.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, he doesn't shoot us. Oh no, because he shot Roma. Yeah.
This is a stacked category, man. These are such good looking films. I think.
Yeah, it's like us three boys, eh?
Yeah. Stacked. The Revenant. The film is all right, but how it looks, The Revenant might be the best looking film I've ever seen. Like when I first saw The Revenant, I was like, "This is as good as you can get." Like I don't know if cinematography can get better than this.
When I first saw The Revenant, I was like, "This is real long."
But damn, it looks good.
and the parking for 3.5 hours cost more than the price of 2 tickets to the film. And movie tickets are fucking expensive.
Holy
but
shit.
Also parking in Newmarket is real fucking expensive.
What? I was gonna say, where do you park, man?
So I don't have great memories with this film.
To be fair, before I went and saw The Revenant, the only thing I really knew about it was one that Leonardo DiCaprio gets inside a horse. He gets inside a horse. Is that right?
Yeah.
I think it's a horse.
And a bear gets inside him, if you believe the rumors.
He has his fingers inside him. and his teeth. No, and also that they shot it entirely in like golden hour, which is like, the time before.
Oh, it would have been hell to film this by the sounds of it.
Sucked.
Like,
It does very much just look like it's just everyone trying real hard to get Oscars.
Yeah.
Anyway, it worked for Leo. Is.
Cinematography's like that though. It's one of the only categories where it's like you genuinely do get rewarded if you're trying to win an Oscar. Right? Because like with acting, people call you out for it, you know? Like, oh, just Oscar Beatty kind of shit. But like, what's Oscar Beatty cinematography? Oscar Beatty cinematography looks great and wins Oscars.
One shot, I would say, is the like is the cool new. And now
I've watched these two of them on here.
Yeah, exactly. We fell for it. okay, so let's go over the winners. So this one, no ties here. There's a tie for fourth place, but who gives a shit about fourth?
Who gives a shit about fourth place?
So, in third place, The Revenant.
Oh, my heart.
In second place, Birdman.
Birdman?
Oh,
then, with 50% of the votes.
Good Christ.
Oh my God.
Blade Runner 2049, Roger Deakins.
I'm not even mad. Beautiful film. I'm in love. I want to get frames from that film tattooed on my nuts,
put them
dude.
Up my butt.
Actually, yeah, I remember vividly last year, the year before, when we talked about it on the Oscar podcast, he was like, I want to get frames of this, and he's still talking about it.
I said
I want to get them tattooed on my nuts now, so I've graduated.
Which
shot?
You know the fucking shot, the one with the giant Ana de Armas pointing at little.
That's my Gosling. My lock screen on my computer.
I thought you were gonna get the like massive orange panorama of him walking into the distance because of your wide nuts.
Oh, yeah, I'd still need wide nuts for any of the shots, dude. This one compliments to the Ana de Armas shot
is all the same.
The Ana de Armas shot compliments it quite well, though, because you can have Ana de Armas huge hologram on one nut and then tiny Ryan Gosling on the other nut.
Oh, yeah. For your massively lopsided nuts.
Yeah.
Your penny farthing nuts.
You fucking asshole with your penny farthing nuts. Oh, is that a term? Did you make that up? That's such a good insult, dude.
Yeah, I did.
Penny farthing nuts? That's so good.
Because well, you talked about one of them being big and one of them being small.
I get it. It's good. And it's the greatest.
Ruined it. I feel like that was one of the funniest things I've ever said, and now it's been dissected.
And it's the greatest gift that Best Cinematography of the 2010s could have given us.
Okay.
No, I'm very happy that one. Cool.
Yeah, so, all right, let's go to Best Film Editing.
This was a hard category to nominate stuff for.
Yeah.
Because editing, it's hard. Yeah.
Yeah, it's if it's good, you don't notice it.
And if it's obtrusive, then it's nominated for an Oscar.
So, I'm going to have to look up the names of these editors, aren't I?
I told you to do it in the poll, and you said...
you forgot about it.
You said, no, AJ, we'll do it on pod. Editing's also an interesting Oscar where a lot of the films that haven't been represented in other categories get represented in editing. So what does that tell you about editing?
It's shit.
Yeah, it's not very good.
As two people who edit things for their jobs.
Now, AJ's got a new job.
Oh, yeah. You're not doing the editing
anymore. I'm now showing people how to edit things.
Oh, well, there you go.
And they're all, and it's not, you know, I'm not very good at it. So, because no one's good at editing. That was the joke, right? Or is it just that editing has a glass ceiling on how good it can be?
There's only so much I can do, man.
Yeah, we need to break through that glass ceiling.
They need to just come up with a new form of a fade or a crossfade.
A star wipe.
Did you just invent that?
A star fade. Oh.
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 All right. So,
okay, so the nominees for Best Film Editing are Whiplash.
Which was edited by Tom Cross.
Birdman.
Douglas Kreese and Stephen Marioni.
And for presumably the same reason, 1917.
That was Lee Smith.
John Wick, the black sheep of the nominations.
Yeah. Elizabeth Ronalds.
Mad Max Fury Road.
That was Margaret Sixel.
And Baby Driver.
Paul Maklos and Jonathan Amos.
I like that John Wick got nominated here because hell yeah.
Now that I think about it, what a fantastic edit job was done on that film.
As good as it could have been. As good as editing allows.
They were bumping up against that glass ceiling like nobody's
But yeah, so it's interesting because we've got probably the two showiest edits of the decade in Baby Driver and Whiplash, the ones that you can... Any random person, your grandma could watch and be like, oh, that was a well edited film. And then we've got the
your
two...
grandma who's fucking sucks at editing. Grandma's still on Windows Movie Maker.
Your grandma Thelma Schoonmaker, Martin Scorsese's editor.
I love the idea that grandma is an editor, but it's not that she doesn't know editing.
She is an editor professionally.
She's a beginning editor.
And then we've got the two films that the... I'm not 100% sure about Birdman, but 1917 was looked over by the Oscars because they couldn't even see the editing because it was so
seamless. To be fair, everything was shot to be stitched together pretty easily,
that's
right?
The thing, yeah.
And Mad Max Fury Road, I think, is really cool because, and I think we talked about this on the episode, that it's edited so that it draws your eye. It's in the action sequences, it'll draw your eye to where the next cut will take off from. So if someone moves from top part of the screen to the bottom part of the screen, and then it cuts. The next shot will begin in the bottom half of the screen and move somewhere else. And it's a really cohesive way to edit action, and it's really effective.
Because you're never stuck after a cut being like, oh shit, what, like taking that half second to know what's going on. When it's so quickly cut, you don't have time to miss anything. And so, yeah, the film guides your eye in a really beautiful way.
Do you think it has a lot to do, again, with the way it's shot, though? Because, like, presumably they should have shot it in mind with, like, having that stuff going on.
With storyboarding and things, yeah.
But that is still editing, I would say. Editing can be pre-editing, right? You know you're going to edit it this way, so you film it that way.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's, but then how much credit should the editor be getting, man?
Because that's the thing as well. There's an interesting video about how an animated movie is edited, because you edit an animated movie essentially by making it. You only make the shot as long as it needs to be, because you know going into, you don't want to make excess stuff. And so it's like the editing is essentially like storyboarding falls into editing as well. In some ways, and it depends on the film and the relationship between the editor and the filmmaker, I guess. But should we go over the winners?
And just John Wick, what a kinetic film, you know? Yeah. So choppy, so good.
Yeah, it's almost a shame no one voted for it. tied for third place, we've got Birdman and Baby Driver.
Okay.
And then tied for first place, we've got Mad Max Fury Road and Whiplash.
Cool. Makes sense.
Yeah.
I thought you said there were hardly ever ties in the Oscars, Richard. We've had like three or four this ceremony.
AJ, I keep telling you, no one cares about our podcast.
AJ, I keep telling you that this isn't the real fucking Oscars!
Okie dokie. So, best animated feature.
Mm-hmm.
Big one.
This was a hard award to pick a winner for.
Well, yeah,
I feel
especially
there are several standouts.
The Oscars are traditionally so bad at this.
Yeah. They're getting better, though.
Yeah.
Okay, so the nominees for Best Animated Feature are Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, Your Name, It's Such a Beautiful Day, Anomalisa, The Lego Movie, Klaus, Toy Story 3, Inside Out, and Frozen. Fucking hell. What a list, man.
Yeah.
The most defining animated films of the decade. Absolutely.
Your Name, It's Such a Beautiful Day, and The Lego Movie weren't nominated for Oscars, interestingly.
A crime.
Yeah. A crying shame.
Yeah.
What do we think of all these movies?
I want to say, for the record, because I've been seeing a lot of anti-Toy Story 4 speak lately, I think Toy Story 4 is better than Toy Story 3, but we haven't had enough time for it to prove itself. So Toy Story 3 makes it in over 4, if only because we're taking recency bias into account for it. But to me, it's between Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse and Inside Out. Those two... And I voted for Spider-Man because if we're talking strictly animated, it's clearly the winner. But Inside Out's got such a beautiful story.
Right, like,
it's
so
such
you think,
beautiful story.
You think Inside Out's probably a better film, but Spider-Man uses the genre, that like the
uses
medium.
The thing it's the main thing it's nominated for better.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, this is one of those ones where it's like, yeah, I mean, it goes to Spider-Man, but It's Such a Beautiful Day and Your Name are like two of my favorite films.
Yeah, man. No, absolutely. And like the Lego movie, like the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse exists probably because of the Lego movie. You know, and Klaus is what Spider-Man births in its wake. So
yeah,
man. And you got to put Frozen in there because that's 1 million children's favorite film.
I think a lot more than a million.
No. Specifically, like there's more people who watch it all the time, but they probably prefer like Aladdin or
What are you gonna say?
I was just gonna say that it's interesting the like mix of not genres, but just like, you know, you got Frozen, which is like a straight down the line animated normal movie, but then so many of these movies are like deep kind of philosophical meditations on what it is to be like a human being.
Yeah.
But they're all like animated
yeah,
movies.
Man. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, like Anomalisa and It's Such a Beautiful Day, not like kids' movies.
Yeah.
Neither's Your Name, really.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Your Name's aimed at like an older audience as well.
I'm proud of these nominees, man. This is such a good list of animated films.
I also like the thing I love, because when like sending this list to people to get them to vote and to comment on it and stuff like that, they're talking about. Someone asked, "Are we judging it on the quality of the animation?" And I said about how it's because there's quite a lot of variance in the animation styles and the quality of animation, but because Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse and Your Name are probably the two most beautifully animated movies I've ever seen, and Klaus actually. But then like It's Such a Beautiful Day is pencil on paper, hand-drawn stick figures, but it's so the most appropriate animation for the story and for the way the story is told. And so, and like same with Anomalisa, it's like a it's a claymation but almost photorealistic, it's not cartoony in any way, and that becomes part of the story as well.
And I'd actually technically say probably all of these nominations, these nominees, qualify for that. It's just something like Inside Out doesn't need to be stop motion animated or whatever, you know, like they all are the form of animation that best complements the film, I think.
But at the same time, Inside Out and Frozen could be 2D animated. They could be.
Yeah, that's true.
Although I guess like Inside Out especially, and actually and Frozen, like they make the most of the three-dimensional world.
Yeah.
And like with the particle physics, and because like every Disney movie 3D animation is like essentially they set themselves a new test to be like, let's see if we can get this to work. So like Monsters Inc. was the fur dynamics, and or like Finding Nemo was underwater kind of effects and the way the lights work.
Brave was Merida's hair. Yeah.
That like you, rather than fur, like trying to get like hair to look. And then Frozen, yeah, is the particle physics of the snow and like the way they like the fractals of the snowflakes and things like that. And then Inside Out was actually using a moving object like Joy, the main character, as a light source. So she's actually a dynamic light source herself. And so it's kind of the thing they set themselves in that movie. But yeah. Interesting.
And the Oscar goes to?
Okay, so in second place, it's a 6-way tie between Your Name, It's Such a Beautiful Day, Anomalisa, Klaus, Toy Story 3, and Inside Out. And wow. Then in first place, with 60% of the votes, it's Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, such a good movie.
Of course it is. Of course it is. Nice.
Yeah. It is interesting, though, because Toy Story 3 is the only one of those that made the jump from animated feature to being nominated for Best Picture. But
yeah,
Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is such, like, it's such an animated movie. Like, you know, it does the specific thing better, even if, you know, Toy Story 3 is maybe arguably a better film, but yeah.
In some ways, that's because it's like an adaptation of a visual medium in and of itself, you know? Like, I feel like, yeah, because it's already like a visual medium that they're adapting, you know?
A comic book, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. So it brings with it that, like, already like entrenched in it, that sense of like, you know, animation and like the
it's a comic book come to life, which is arguably a better reason to do it as an animated film than like Toy Story 3 has. Not that it needs to make an argument for why it's an animated
film. It's kind of like you know how the first seasons of Game of Thrones are real good because they're based on like 1,000-page novels kind of distilled down into like and then they get like terrible later on because they have like no source material. I'd say it's kind of like that, you know, like having source material to like increase the richness of your animation, basically.
Yeah.
Nice.
And okay, so now we're into the big acting categories. So first off, we'll go best supporting actress. So our nominees are Patricia Arquette for Boyhood, Hayley Steinfeld for True Grit, Scarlett Johansson for Her, her voice only role. Naomi Harris for Moonlight and Lupita Nyong'o for 12 Years a Slave. Great performances.
I can't remember who I voted for. I think I voted for Naomi Harris and Moonlight.
Nice.
But they're also great. What do you guys think of these roles?
When I saw Boyhood, I was blown away by Patricia Arquette specifically. Yeah. And Ethan Hawke as well.
She's the best part of the film.
Yeah. But the fact that she's able to keep one character consistent over 12 years and have it feel like the same person, but also having grown, and the fact that it's just these little insights into their life. Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. Not to lean too heavily on the they filmed it over 12 years thing. But yeah, no, I think it's a fantastic performance. And the scene where she breaks down when she's like, I thought there would be more, was fantastic. Oh. And it's such a beautiful like portrayal of Empty Nest kind of, yeah. Aaron, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. And again, not to lean too heavily on the they filmed it over 12 years. But you're right, you know, there's a certain extent to which, and this is quite Oscar-y as well, you know, like I think a lot of performances are like voted the best performance because they're like the most hard acted, you know, like if you think of Winston Churchill from 2019 or
Gary,
you know,
Oldman,
like, yeah, Gary Oldman, you know, there's that thing about American cinema where they're like, oh man, he's like actually, he's like putting so much of himself into the role that we can kind of like see it. So yeah, I can kind of see how this would be like the best Oscar, but also like just as an act of like will, it's pretty incredible to be able to like pull that off over 12 years.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is that Boyhood is an experiment. And just because something is defined or, you know, set apart because of the experiment that it is, it doesn't mean it's any less deserving of that specific recognition, you know?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, it's not just that it's like shot over 12 years. It's also that like the 12 years thing adds to the power of the story that they're telling, as opposed to like, you know, a gimmicky kind of cinematography thing or something like that, where you're this doesn't feel like it adds to the thing. It just like, you know, it's a thing that kind of clouds the movie.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I was about to be like, all right, moving on, but we haven't actually announced who won yet. Tied for third place, we have Naomi Harris, Moonlight, and Scarlett Johansson, Her. In second place, Lupita Nyong'o, 12 Years a Slave. And in first place, Patricia Arquette, Boyhood.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Poor Hailee Steinfeld. You'll get there one day.
Yeah, it's interesting. Lupita Nyong'o, again, we didn't really talk about her, but that's such a good performance for how little she's in that film.
Yeah, that's true. I did actually think of voting for her, because I still remember it.
Yeah, because she's in like one scene, right?
Yeah, I think it's one or two scenes, basically. Yeah,
yeah. But it took the world by storm.
Yeah.
Can I also
say quickly, having had the experience recently where I like listened to a whole play without seeing the physical action, and I was like, man, this is real terrible. And then I like saw the actual play with the physical action and with like the dialogue. I was like, man, this is way better. Like the level of work it would take to, you know, like just be the voice and still be really good. I mean, voice actors do that all the time, obviously, but you know, like you don't actually have a physical body to embody, like even like an animated body to embody it. So yeah, I just wanted to highlight that and how good I think that performance is as well.
And Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
Her, yeah, yeah.
I thought you were still talking about Lupita Nyong'o.
I was like, did you see the movie?
She was there.
I listened to a podcast of it. all right. So best supporting actor. Another good category. They're all good categories.
What would win the Oscar for best category?
Well, it would certainly be nominated. So we've got Sylvester Stallone for Creed, John Goodman for 10 Cloverfield Lane, Philip Seymour Hoffman in The Master, Sam Rockwell, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, Adam Driver in BlacKkKlansman, and Mahershala Ali in Moonlight.
God, I love Adam Driver so much, you guys.
Yeah.
That's why he got
into this thing, even though probably a bit of recency bias, I think.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Nah.
I reckon everyone
that you suggested was recency bias.
Really?
It's only like 10 who? Years. I don't know all the recent ones that you suggested.
Give me one example there, Joe. You can't.
I don't know who you suggested.
You know what?
Yeah, well, I think Adam Driver's good in that, but I think it's not even his best supporting performance of the decade.
Mm.
I'd give that What's to probably Last Jedi or Force Awakens. But not Rise of Skywalker.
He really dropped the ball that year.
I think Adam Driver's probably one of the best supporting actors of the decade, or one of the best like new kind of actors of the decade.
Not even supporting, yeah, just actor.
Yeah, but he kind of made his name for himself like with these amazing supporting roles, and then towards the end of the decade getting those lead roles. But Sylvester Stallone for Creed, that's probably one of the, I wish that it had won the Oscar, because he's so good in that movie.
Mm.
And it's like, even though, you know, it's fun to shit on Sylvester Stallone being shit, but fuck, he's good as Rocky Balboa, and that's the last time he's gonna be good enough to get an Oscar.
Yeah.
Yeah, John Goodman, 10 Cloverfield Lane is, that's one of those ones that, similar to something like, Toni Collette in Hereditary was like a real, I hope this gets nominated for an Oscar, but I know it won't.
Mm.
And then looking back at the end of the decade, there's still kind of a lot of buzz around that performance and how it should have been recognized, especially because John Goodman's one of those actors that always puts in a great performance, but has never been nominated. Much like, actually, another actor who I think we've probably snubbed here, J.K. Simmons in Whiplash.
We also snubbed Toni Collette in Hereditary.
Yeah, I know. She was on the shortlist, though, to be fair.
Oh.
But, yeah, I think we just some missed out on J.K. Simmons. Although, I think, even though I love that film, I love that performance, I love J.K. Simmons, that it's like, how much is it, you know, that it's just such an interesting character, and then like, there isn't the same kind of like, work, I guess,
yeah.
In a way, that it's like, you know, yeah, compared to some of these characters where it's like, there's a lot more depth to them, whereas there could be an argument that his character's a bit one note in that movie, as much as I love it.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of comes back to that thing of like, how well do you fulfill the brief? You know, like, he did what was required for it, and he made it like, you know, like, he embodied it.
And he created this iconic character.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, like, did the script call for moments of like, maybe it did, maybe it didn't, you know? Mm. Like, were there notes that he missed or things he could have done that would have made it better, you know?
Yeah, it's funny because it's like I 100% would have him on here and I probably would have voted for him, but I'm just trying to justify him not being on there even though I disagree with it.
Yeah.
I have no idea who's going to win this one. So I'm very interested to see what the results are.
In third place, Sylvester Stallone from Creed.
Nice.
In second place, Mahershala Ali from Moonlight.
Ah.
And in first place, the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman in The Master.
Yeah. Totally
so
fair.
So good.
Yeah, because fuck, man, that's probably the best acted film I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
And because he died 2 years later, I think, or maybe even 1 year later.
He died in 2014. I think The Master's 2012.
2012, so. Yeah. It's such a, like, beautiful, like, not final performance, but, like, that. Because you look at someone like Robin Williams, who passed away, and it was like had been a while since his last like great performance, whereas like Philip Seymour Hoffman was like got one under the line kind of thing. It was like Robin Williams is a bit like I do wonder sometimes how many great performances we would have had he still been alive.
Yeah.
But Philip Seymour Hoffman is like the world was robbed of like incredible performance after incredible performance.
Mm.
Nothing at all against Robin Williams. I fucking love Robin Williams.
It's hard to believe Philip Seymour Hoffman's even dead.
Yeah.
Is that a weird thing to say? Like, it's just strange to think of, yeah.
Yeah. And his performance in that film was just incredible.
So good. I feel The Master might be the most under the radar film we've nominated on this list, just in terms of general film audiences. And if that's the case and you haven't seen The Master, highly recommend going out.
Mm. It is a bit of a difficult watch, I will mention. It's a character-driven film, not a story-driven film. So there's quite a few times where you're like, why am I here? When does this take place? But it has probably the best acted scene I've ever seen in a film.
Agreed.
Yeah. Next up, best actress. The most actress. Best actress. Okay. Our nominees are... Yeah. Do you want to say them, AJ?
I'll do them. Brie Larson for Room. Florence Pugh for Midsummer. Rosamund Pike for Gone Girl, Frances McDormand for Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, Jennifer Lawrence for Winter's Bone, which I will note was a hard movie for us to whittle down to just being one of them, and Charlize Theron for Mad Max Fury Road. Jennifer Lawrence, I probably would have gone Mother over Winter's Bone. I've actually seen Winter's Bone, so I don't actually know.
Yeah, Jennifer Lawrence is one of those ones where there's an argument that she's the best actress of the decade.
Yeah.
But are any one of her performances better than
I voted for Frances McDormand, for example.
Yeah. But it's funny, Jennifer Lawrence, it almost feels like we've seen her entire career in the 2010s. It's just been announced that she's doing a film with Adam McKay. Yeah, it feels like she hasn't done anything in a while, and it's like,
did walk away for a while.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
It does feel like we've seen like almost. It's not been like a fall. It's just been kind of like a staying out of the limelight, like a Joseph Gordon-Levitt kind of thing. That it's like, yeah, pop out in every now and then, I'm sure, but it feels like we've seen her golden era,
the beginning and the end.
Yeah.
I saw Joseph Gordon-Levitt tweet something about Hit Record the other day, and someone replied to him and said, "For the love of God, I am begging you, please return to acting. Stop doing this Hit Record shit, and please return to acting."
That's great. What do we think?
One thing I will say, before we talk about the best of the best, it feels weird that Meryl Streep is not in this category.
Interesting, yeah, good point.
Like, I mean, she only had one win this decade with, for Iron Lady.
Iron Lady, yeah.
But, you know, like, she still feels like she should have... She's still ever-present, you know what I mean?
What do you think was her best performance of the decade?
Ooh.
Put your money where... Put your mirror where your mouth is.
That's interesting, actually. I haven't seen the TV series that she's in.
Oh, yeah, the...
Big Little Lies.
Yeah, Big Little Lies. But I would actually say... August Osage County, maybe?
Oh, yeah.
Because she just, like, she has so much range in that movie, it's crazy.
Mm. Yeah, she's really good in Little Women as well, to be fair.
I would nominate her for Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, where she opted to not be in the film because it was more interesting for the screenplay. And let me tell you, it was not more interesting for the screenplay to not have best actress in the world, Meryl Streep, in the film. But by a similar token, and a spoiler for what's up ahead, we haven't nominated Tom Hanks for Best Actor, and he's the male Meryl Streep, you know.
So, Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep. Maelstrom. Who is this going to go to? Who did you vote for, you guys?
So I think Brie Larson in Room is like one of the all-time great performances. Frances McDormand is like a fucking tour de force in that film and Three Billboards.
God, Florence Pugh is going to have such a good 2020s, isn't she?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
When we do the Oscars of the 2020s in 10 years' time, we're going to be talking about it. She's going to have so many nominations. She's got such a promising career ahead of her.
I feel like you've just jinxed it. Aaron, what do you reckon?
Yeah, same thing. I got to say Frances McDormand. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Such a good performance.
Imagine being jinxed by a podcast no one listens to from like, that's not a big enough platform to be jinxed by.
Okay, so in third place, we've got Jennifer Lawrence, Winter's Bone. In second place, Brie Larson, Room. And in first place, Frances McDormand, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
It's a good performance. It is.
Yeah. As a quick side note, yeah. I once met the guy who cast Jennifer Lawrence in Winter's Bone.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 100%. I did like a acting workshop with him. He came over from the States. He's a real cool dude. He casted like a whole lot of independent films and stuff. Like one.
But
of
he goes on about the one that
he's always going it, on about how he knows Jennifer Lawrence. Like, yeah, whatever, man. You casted her when she was young.
All right, let's move on to best actor. Okay,
I want Aaron to read the nominations.
I'll read the nominations. Let me swing round my microphone while Richard brings it up. All right, all the ones in yellow.
Yellow.
In old yellow.
Old yellow is nominated for best.
Best performance by a dog. all right, first up we've got Jake Gyllenhaal in Nightcrawler. We've got Joaquin Phoenix for The Master. Timothy Chalamet for Call Me By Your Name, Adam Driver for Marriage Story, Kang Ho Song for Parasite, and Leonardo DiCaprio for Wolf of Wall Street. But the not filmish. The Revenant.
Yeah, I was going to say. All right, like, Joaquin Phoenix in The Master is... I didn't know acting could be that good. And I watched
and
that
I've
film.
Seen Aaron act.
And I've seen Daniel Day-Lewis. I've seen him.
Yeah. Daniel Day-Lewis not nominated.
Yeah.
I watched The Master for the first time when we were flatting together. Richard, you had it on Blu-ray. And the Nerd Writer released a video essay about it. And I was like, I want to watch this, but I haven't actually seen the film. So it was like probably 2016. I just chucked the Blu-ray in and watched The Master, not knowing anything about it. And it was such a wonderful way to experience it.
Yeah, I remember you coming. I didn't know where you were. I thought you just weren't at home. And then you came into the lounge at like 1 a.m. I was completely naked. And then, no, this isn't true. yeah, I was just like chilling in the lounge. And you came out and were like, oh, I just watched The Master. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's real good. And you're like, yeah, it's pretty good.
No, I didn't. I specifically said, I remember what I said to you. I said, I feel like that was the best movie ever. And you said, seriously? And I was like, yeah, man. Like, I was so disarmed by how good it was that
it's funny, the movies that we say are the best ones we've ever seen. I remember when you came home from Hacksaw Ridge, you said that might be the best movie you've ever seen.
Yeah, that was recency bias.
Really said that about Hacksaw Ridge.
I love Hacksaw Ridge.
Is a good film. It's a good film.
Look, man, it's 2 hours of the trailer.
It's the best film I've ever seen.
It is the best movie I've ever seen. yeah, I love Hacksaw Ridge, man.
It's recency bias, guys.
Yeah. I do think that maybe Kang Ho Song is a bit of recency bias.
Yeah.
Bit of recency bias.
It's one of those films that, like, the thing about Parasite, and a lot of people were like, it's, you know, it's got locked out of the acting nominations, but it won the Screen Actors Guild Award for Best Ensemble. That it's like, it actually, every single person in that cast is incredible, but no, it doesn't, it means that no one actor stands out above the rest. Mm. But yeah, also, Leonardo DiCaprio was the late addition to this list by me. Famous anti-Leonardo DiCaprio. Wolf of Wall Street, I think, is his best performance. And
I agree.
Potentially maybe on par with his performance in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. However, I did not think he deserved his Oscar for The Revenant because he's not even the best actor in The Revenant, which is what I say every time it's brought up. Tom Hardy was much better in that film.
Is Adam Driver for Marriage Story a bit of recency bias?
That's one of those ones that I think will time will tell. I think it's a bit of AJ Adam Driver bias.
He's so good in Marriage Story, though. Yeah. Did you ever finish it, Aaron?
No, I still haven't finished it. I've seen the scene, though.
Yeah.
Okay. That's important.
Yeah, and Timothy Chalamet in Call Me By Your Name, one of my favorite performances of the decade.
So good.
But let's see. Oh, and actually, Jake Gyllenhaal from Nightcrawler. That was the best performance that year, and he was locked out of the Oscars.
Who won that year?
That was Eddie Redmayne.
Michael Keaton.
Eddie Redmayne was actually real fucking good in that movie.
Yeah.
Not good enough to be nominated for Best Actor of the Decade.
Yeah, sorry, Eddie.
Sorry Eddie.
okay, so tied for second place, we've got the recent Adam Driver in Marriage Story, and Jake Gyllenhaal in Nightcrawler.
Wow.
However, in first place, we've got the current holder of the Best Actor Oscar trophy, Joaquin Phoenix, for his performance in The Master.
It's so fucking good. It's so good.
Yeah.
He deserves. He deserves our meaningless award.
Who did he lose out to that year?
2012.
Was he nominated that year?
He was.
He was, yeah.
He was?
2012. Oh, maybe that was the year of the King's Speech? No.
No, that was 2010. That was 2010. The year of the Artist. Best actor that year went to, Jean Dujardin for The Artist.
Yeah.
Huh.
That's an interesting one, actually. I did think about The Artist not being nominated. When I looked
actually,
at
that,
tell you what, I was wrong there. and actually, that was the Oscars that took place in 2012 for 2011. That year, that was the year that Argo won Best Picture and Daniel Day-Lewis won for Lincoln.
Right.
Oh well, it's Day-Lewis, it's Lincoln.
Yeah.
But just to hop on that point about The Artist, Aaron, I think you couldn't get a more forgettable film of the decade. That film has had no staying power for the past 10 years, I reckon.
That's interesting, actually, because I do think about that film like a little bit over the past decade. And I think you're potentially right in the sense of like the average person, you know, probably hasn't thought about The Artist. But I think it is a very Oscar-y movie because it's like, you know, one of those things that's like about Hollywood. So if like you wanted an example of Hollywood-loving films about Hollywood, that's probably it. But I also think that it's a real good film.
That's such like a, just a build up to like, and you know what? It's not that bad.
I think it lives up to the hype. I just think it's like, yeah, it's maybe forgotten.
Do you know what? I've never seen it.
Really?
Yeah.
2011 wasn't a very good year either, though. So.
Yeah, I do somewhat agree. Yeah, 2011 seems like the last year that I wasn't really interested in the Oscars.
Interesting. You mean 2012?
2011 for The Artist.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay, yes, yes.
The Oscar, the ceremony took place in 2012. Yeah. Ooh, I feel like I did have one more thing to say, but I can't remember what it was. So let's move the fuck on to Best Director.
Hey.
Okay, so our nominees for this are Alejandro González Iñárritu for Birdman, Christopher Nolan for Dunkirk, Denis Villeneuve for Arrival, Martin Scorsese for The Irishman, Jordan Peele for Get Out, Bong Joon-ho for Parasite, Greta Gerwig for Lady Bird, and Damien Chazelle for La La Land.
Man, okay. Whatever wins, Denis Villeneuve is the director of the decade.
Yeah, 100%.
That dude has had such an incredible run.
So let's... his the films he made in the last decade were Incendies, Enemy, Prisoners, Arrival, Blade Runner 2049, Sicario, and that's it.
incredible. Yeah. So good.
You'd have to think that Alejandro is almost there as well, though, right? I mean, he won for Birdman as well as The Revenant.
He also won a Special Achievement Oscar, which was like the first time it had been given out in like 20 years for his work with in virtual reality.
Whoa!
Yeah.
I think you could also say it's the same thing for Nolan, just because Nolan's like the mainstream version of those two directors.
Yeah, that's true.
Because
this decade he had Inception,
Dark Knight Rises,
Interstellar, Dunkirk. Yeah.
Fucking hell! Like, I agree with you, Aaron, but I think I go to Villeneuve for of the decade just because his films are like bigger than Alejandro González Iñárritu's.
And
like,
he did more as well.
It's
worth pointing out as well that Scorsese in this decade had Hugo, which was the most nominated film that year. The Irishman, Silence, Wolf of Wall Street,
But I like to think we're nominating Scorsese specifically for The Irishman because that's such a director-driven film.
Sure. But yeah, and also, like I mentioned before, Greta Gerwig and Jordan Peele were able to elevate these kind of, like, in lesser hands would be either, you know, just a forgettable kind of nice-ish slice of life movie that you'd give 3.5 stars and tell your friends, oh yeah, it's not that bad, you may as well watch it. And a schlocky B-movie horror.
Yeah, yeah, and I'd say about those two as well, Greta Gerwig and Jordan Peele, but I also include Bong Joon-ho in introducing the world to a type of movie that we don't always see in getting Oscar love, and that's really cool. And Parasite with Bong Joon-ho is like, I felt so safe in the hands of him as a director. Do you know what I mean? Like, I trusted him that he was going to, and I knew nothing about him watching it, but like trusted that he knew what he was doing with the story and is taking you through the story, like, and crafting it expertly. So damn, so good.
Damn.
So good. Damien Chazelle for La La Land.
actually Damien Chazelle, I want to put forward as one of the best, directors of the decade as well. That Whiplash, La La Land, and First Man. I mean, because months ago when we first started talking about this, our very first shortlist had Damien Chazelle for both La La Land and Whiplash. And AJ, you were like, oh, we shouldn't have him for two. And I was like, I mean, I there's an argument to be made that those are the two best directed films of the decade. They just happen to be by the same person.
Yeah.
But anyway, I know AJ's a... reverse apologist for La La Land. Okay, so tied for third place, Alejandro Iñárritu for Birdman, Greta Gerwig for Lady Bird, Damien Chazelle for La La Land.
Ha! Sorry.
And then tied for first place, Bong Joon-ho, Parasite, and Denis Villeneuve, Arrival.
Fuck.
Interesting.
So glad. Yeah. That's so good. That's so good.
Yeah. The Denis Villeneuve one feels a bit like wanting to give him like the Legacy Award, and we just happen to, you know, almost arbitrarily pick Arrival as the film that he's nominated for.
Yeah.
But it's that was the one, that was his Oscar-y film that was nominated for Best Picture, and, you know.
While Parasite is the best directed film of the decade, you know? So it's
yeah,
best,
yeah, it almost is
most
like
number of hits with best single directed. Yeah, that worked out quite nicely. But now we're moving on to Best Picture. And I am very proud because I think, if I do say so myself, that these nominees that we collated, that we got from people suggesting and that we put together ourselves, I hate all of them. These are the 11 best films, most defining films of the decade. I think they are. I think every time these movies came out, everyone was talking about these movies. You know,
every time they came out,
every one of them that came out, everyone was talking about these movies. And in order of the year they came out, shall we do all this together? We'll go one at a time each. All right. So the first nominee is The Social Network, 2010.
Then Inception, 2010.
Then we've got Her, 2013.
Whiplash, 2014.
Mad Max Fury Road, 2015.
Moonlight, 2016.
Dunkirk, 2017.
Blade Runner,
2049. Hey. In 2017. Hey.
2017.
Get Out, 2017.
Black Panther, 2018.
And Parasite, 2019.
That's the decade, man. Those fucking films.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, though, that there's nothing from 2011 or 12, which we kind of both just talked about how they were kind of forgettable years for films.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, yeah, when you look back at the decade's winners for Best Picture, like, Green Book is like, oh, fuck you. But, like, The Artist and Argo are like, whatever.
Yeah.
I can see I'll get on board with Argo. That was a very whatever. Also, just quickly, is it sort of interesting that like 2010, 2011, 2012, King's Speech, it kind of looked like Tom Hooper would be one of the like directors of the decade.
Yeah,
and he
yeah.
finished the decade with Cats.
Yeah, yeah, man. Totally.
What did he follow up? He did King's Speech and then did Les Mis, and it was like, this guy's on fire.
Yeah.
And then he did like The Danish Girl.
Yeah.
And then he did cats, and it's like, God, what a fucking, what a like, what you a know, measurable decline.
Yeah. Starting the decade with an Oscar for Best Picture. Yeah.
There's actually like,
with cats.
You could, it's a straight line from like 10 out of 10 King's Speech to 0 out of 10 Cats. And all his films just fall on that.
And yet, to be honest, at the moment, Cats is probably a more iconic film.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that I'm getting a little bit emotional looking at this list. I'm feeling so nostalgic. I remember where I was when I saw each of these. I remember the electricity in the air surrounding conversation of these films. And I think, in a way that's actually quite beautifully symmetrical, I think it's between three of these. I reckon it's either The Social Network, which came out in 2010, Mad Max Fury Road, which came out in 2015, or Parasite, which came out in 2019, which is kind of a cool, beautiful one at the start, one in the middle, and one at the end is this real symmetrical, to me at least, and I feel like to the rest of the world, those are the three films that defined the decade the most.
Also, it's worth noting that we let people pick multiple ones to vote for as well, so that this is hopefully going to pick the film that's in the most people's top three or four kind of thing. Aaron, what do you reckon of these nominees?
Probably going to go with Parasite. I've actually never seen Parasite, but and that might just be a recency bias thing, but yeah, it does sort of sound like it's the most
2010s.
So you're betting what's going to win based on what you think of the people who voted and not for what you think is the
best. That's a good way to do it. I mean, that's what we do with the Oscars. It's like,
yeah, true.
Yeah, Green Book's going to win, obviously. Yeah, 100%. Fucking...
And just like with the Oscars, not all of these judges have watched all the films that we're voting
on. All right, I mean...
Have you seen all these films, Richard, that we've talked about today?
Multiple times.
Really? Because there have been a couple that I'll admit I haven't actually seen.
Oh, really? Okay, let's go through. Social Network, has everyone seen that?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I've seen all the Best Picture nominees.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah, I think I've seen every single film we've talked about.
What do you think, Richard?
Well, I think Mad Max Fury Road, rightly so, is at the top of a lot of conversations about best films of the decade. Moonlight is so much more than the Oscar controversy. It's actually such a good movie. Whiplash is such a distinct feeling. I remember seeing that in the cinema being like, this is one of my favorite movies of all time. I hadn't had that feeling in a while, and I was worried I would never have it again, you know? That there are certain movies you watch and you're like, oh yeah, this is real good. Even, you know, this is incredible. But ones that speak to you so personally for whatever reason, that it elevates that to like an instant kind of reaction. It's love at first sight, essentially, is what I'm describing. But I got it a lot in high school when I was like getting into film, and I've only had it like once or twice since Whiplash, but that was the one I remember sitting in the cinema thinking that.
It sounds like you're talking about an orgasm.
Yeah, I am.
Like, I had it once. I thought I wouldn't have it again. And
is that how orgasms are for you, AJ?
No, you know, like in like sitcoms.
Well, shut up! I've had tons.
Haven't had it in a while. It's 2016.
There's always scenes in sitcoms where like female characters are admitting that they. I don't want to talk about this. All right,
it's busted a nut. What one?
Busted a penny farthing nut. Okay, here we go.
Busting a penny farthing nut. You just justified me keeping that clip in instead of editing it out.
You can edit out the penny farthing bit.
Oh, we edit
no,
out
just
your bit.
That little bit there.
We can edit this part out. But okay.
It's recency bias.
It's interesting because so there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 films that are like tied. And then a few below that, but there's a very clear like 1, 2, 3, which is cool. So no ties here that I'm gonna be talking about. So in third place, Moonlight.
Oh shit.
In second place, Mad Max Fury Road.
What? No!
And then, in first place,
Black Panther.
The cult pop show pick for best film of the 2010s is... Drumroll, please. Whiplash.
No way! Really?
Real.
Whiplash.
Are you serious?
I disagree. What? Not even close. Not even close for me.
Holy That's shit.
I feel like the wind has been taken out of my
I knew it would happen to you
completely.
As well. I'm quite happy with that. I mean, like, yeah, Whiplash, it's my favorite.
No
probably my favorite film
way
of the decade.
Is...
Holy shit, really?
Yeah. But like we said, this is the film that is in the most people's top couple of films.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have even nominated it. You just insisted. But what do I know?
That's incredible. This is just like the real Oscars. You think it's going to be something, and then suddenly it's a fucking disappointment. No,
it is just like the real Oscars. It is. It couldn't have ended in a better place. I was so sure it was going to be Mad Max. I would have bet money on it being Mad Max, even just because everyone's kind of in on the narrative of it being Mad Max, you know?
Not everyone.
Not the Whiplash camp.
Yeah. Not Mr. Richard actually, voted 10 times Martin.
Yeah, exactly. The guy who made the poll. His favorite film won? How interesting. Yeah.
The only person with the results in front of them.
The only admin on the voting.
No, Aaron, you can confirm for us all that looking at this.
Yeah. I can't actually see it. I'm going to swivel my thing
around. No, it's fine.
hold on. Let me swivel. I'm going to swivel. I'm swiveling. And holy shit, it is. And it's like a wee way. I mean, those two are a wee way out in front, but it's really a lot more out
in
front.
It's very close between Whiplash and Fury Road, to be fair.
I need to watch Whiplash again. I bet it was fucking Rowan voted for Whiplash over Mad Max, and that's what... Yeah, that's right. I'm outing our academy. One of them's wrong.
There was one
Jesus
other guy.
I mean, AJ, this was a democratic process.
This is devastating. You know what? I'll say it. Fuck Whiplash. No, I'm just kidding. I barely remember Whiplash. I should go and rewatch it right now because apparently was my own company has voted it the best.
Now you know how I feel scrolling through our Twitter feed and being like, I don't agree with you.
So good. Well, hey, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us on our Oscar season. We've enjoyed doing it. And
see you in 10 years.
The podcast isn't going away, so we've still got more episodes coming out. Tune in next week for the Roger Moore James Bond episodes. And yeah. Thank you for coming on the show, Aaron.
Thank you for having me, guys. It's a pleasure as always.
Yeah.
And if you like Cop Popture, then please subscribe to us on YouTube, on Acast, on Apple Podcasts. Give us a rate and review. 5 stars, please, or just don't bother. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Join our Discord, of which the link to which is in the which of the show notes, along with links to all this stuff. And of course, stick around after this outro music for a cheeky post-credits scene. But yeah, beyond that, hey, there you go.
Yeah, and let us know what you thought of our results. If there's any anyone you think should have won, or anyone that we completely left off altogether.
Yeah. Man, you know that big speech I did about how all these movies were such tentpole releases in my life?
Yeah.
Whiplash wasn't at all. I saw Whiplash on like a free afternoon I had because my friends were going, and I was like, oh yeah, I'll check it out. Alright, thank you everybody.
You got a tweet
we'll
about this,
you.
Aren't you? And I'm going to be like, oh, here we go.
No, I can't agree with this.
15 inches out, Whiplash sucks. And then I'm stuck with that as my fucking opinion to the public.
Goodbye everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Sweet. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the post-credits scene for this episode of the Cult Popture podcast, whatever it may be. I've lost track. I think it's still an Oscars one. I think it's our Oscars.
Yeah,
if this
was Oscars
if this past episode Yeah, Oscars of the 2010s. If not, I'll cut this part out.
If this last episode was our Oscars of the 2010s, make some noise.
Yeah.
Not you.
That I was leaving them room to make some noise. So yeah, Richard, what is this segment? Why do we do this?
All right, so this is part of our the segment's brought to you by Patreon, which for our fans, our patrons who pledge $5 or more a month, they get to suggest, just essentially give us something to talk about in a little cheeky post-credit scene, which you're listening to now.
And if you want to be part of that, then you can, of course, donate at www.coldpopshire.com. No, www.patreon.com/coldpopshire. And today's question, this week's question, comes from Nadishta, who's been on the show before. How good's that? We just squeeze money out of anyone on this show. And she asks, what's a movie that everyone has told you must see that you haven't seen and probably won't see or won't go out of your way to see, and why?
Now, we're going to have very different answers for this, because I know you probably have a massive list, and I could probably provide a massive list of movies that I've told you need to watch that I know you're never going to see. Parasite was actually the top of the list for a while. I guess that proves that you do eventually.
I would like to challenge your assumption that I'll never see them. I think I will see them one day.
I don't have any movies that I will never get around to seeing or will never go out of my way of seeing that people have told me I must check out. Like, I don't go, oh, okay, yeah, all right, I'm going to check out. Because I'm a firm believer of you have to see a movie to have an opinion on it, or like to be able to. I mean, there's lots of movies I haven't seen that I have strong opinions on, but.
I was going to say, you haven't seen The Greatest Showman, have you?
I have seen The Greatest Showman. I went out of my way to watch The Greatest Showman so that I could have an informed opinion on it.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was talking to someone at work the other day who was talking about how First Man wasn't as good as La La Land or Whiplash. And I agree with that statement, but they were like, oh, it was shit. Like, I didn't even stay for the whole thing. Like, I left after like an hour, and I was like, well, then you don't have an opinion on it. Because not only is the best part of that film the moon landing sequence, but yeah, I was like, yeah, you don't get to join this discussion because you haven't seen the movie. What about you, Paddleton?
I think I'll see Paddleton one day. What's got to the point in my kind of personal canon that feels like I can never see at this point is Pacific Rim, and I've talked about this before. Exposure to Pacific Rim was I didn't think the trailer looked very good and was shocked to see some people thought it looked very good. I like Guillermo del Toro enough, you know, to not want to write off any of his films. But I've heard so many good things about Pacific Rim, and I've heard so many bad things about Pacific Rim that it just
And you've heard some middle things from me.
Yeah, you're the lone middler. and I just think it's funnier if I don't see it now, if my perceptions of it remain a mystery, like a MacGuffin. It's my MacGuffin.
What's
like a white whale that you're not even after?
yeah. Well, there's a lot of movies that I've never seen that I want to see one day, but I just haven't had a chance to go out of my way to see them. Jaws was one of them for the longest time. The Godfather 2, we almost were fucking going to watch, but then we decided to do James Bond instead. Beetlejuice is my other big one.
I really want to see Beetlejuice.
But I haven't seen, I'm not avoiding these movies. I've just like...
No.
You know. I genuinely, if someone tells me I need to watch a movie, I will... My time isn't valuable enough to not spend it watching movies.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.